All right, I want to welcome everyone to the Building Fires podcast. I'm Corey McCain, your co-host, CEO of WeStrive.
I'm Farhad Jamayan, the CEO of Canna.
Boom. So every week we interview some of the coolest entrepreneurs on the planet. They've had billion-dollar exits, absolutely killing it, and we figure out how they did it, why they did it, and we try and get tips for everyone on how to really grow a company.
Absolutely. Totally unscripted, casual conversations where we get to, you know, that real deep dive view of exactly what went down, but a lot of fun, really great. Tune in.
Building Fires. My friend Steph, so she was giving me a tour of the South Side, and she's like, hey, we have to stop by this Michelada spot. And I'm like, no way, I've been wanting to go. And then we pulled up.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and it was like, it was so fire, dude. We got in and out in a couple of minutes. You know, all the COVID precautions were there. It tasted absolutely great. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Greg, do you want to share a little bit about the business? It's awesome. It's one of his actual. Yeah.
Wait, this is one of your businesses?
Yes, in a way. It's it is a business that I helped start, but it's also it's more so my wife's business.
Oh, very cool. Yeah.
And I can go. Do you guys want the short version or long version? Are we already recording or?
Well, we're recording. We can swing it back. We'll highlight first what you actually do, and then we'll swing back around to the Michelada biz. I'll make a little note so we don't forget. Okay. So, because yeah, I mean, I'm not a big Michelada guy, but I'm down to actually wait.
Hold dude, on. So it's stacked. They have like shrimp and like bacon, and it's like okay, it's like a whole experience.
That's why I am a Michelada guy. I just hate Bloody Marys. That's all I know. So
okay, yeah, they're not, okay. Micheladas are not Bloody Marys.
I know they're not Bloody Marys. I was just like I was spacing out for a sec.
No, but it's similar. I mean, and but you can also get it without the tomato juice. So yeah, you probably don't like the tomato juice, right?
I hate the tomato juice.
You can get a Michelada without tomato juice.
Just give me a beer, dude.
Yeah, you can because really, I mean, it's kind of one of those things that you've seen probably a lot in the foodie world, in the argument of what is technically this food item, when is it no longer that food item? Like you even have people say a hamburger is not a hamburger unless it has ketchup or. You know, ketchup you should never be on a hamburger. And, you know, that's
hot take, but okay. Yeah, I'm following.
So it's kind of the same. It's kind of the same logic. A true Michelada is not a Michelada unless you have blah, blah, blah. But really what we're talking about here are beer cocktails. Mm, and with more of a Mexican tinge, right? So with heavily influenced by Mexican culture, beer cocktails. So if you don't want to have tomato juice in it, that's your call. And yeah, I mean, you could still argue that it is a Michelada. So,
yes, real quick plug, what's it called and where is it at in Oklahoma City?
So the name of the business is Crudolandia in Spanish, Crudolandia. And basically, we have two locations in South Oklahoma City, Southwest 29th Street and Southwest 59th Street. We also have a location in East Tulsa. And we're about to open up a location this year in Farhaj's old stomping grounds.
Big time.
Yeah, bro.
And it's very like cool. Crudolandia means hangover land, right?
Exactly. Yes, it's sort of a play on words. It's like a pun. And hangover land because the way you – okay, so you know you've heard of Disneyland, obviously. And in Mexico, when you refer to Disneyland, they say Disneylandia.
Yeah.
And so it's a play on words of Disneylandia. It's where you would go to cure hangover because in the Mexican culture, a lot of people would swear by micheladas as being a cure for cancer. I mean, cancer, I'm sorry. A cure for hangovers.
I'm like, bro, give me some of these micheladas, dude.
Like a cure for hangovers. I don't know where the cancer came from. Yeah, that was strange, but yeah.
Amazing. Well, cool, man. All right. So that's just another thing you're doing. So give us your quick intro of who you are and then let's talk about your business, your main business.
Yeah. So my name is Greg Hallman. I am the CEO of Occupath, along with my co-founder, Chris Lucas. And Occupath, we're basically a virtual reality company focusing on using virtual reality as a tool in the workforce, a tool for training. So we help employers train their employees using virtual reality.
That's huge.
I love it. And I've interviewed Brian Hong, who I'm sure Farhad has introduced you guys. I haven't yet. What?
Yeah.
Are you joking? So Brian does virtual reality training for like
first responders, for first police responders. Officers, firefighters.
How military. Have you not made that intro?
I don't know. I think I talked to like Chris about Brian, but for some reason what? I haven't made the intro. Yeah.
Okay, we'll do that intro afterwards.
Yeah, because like both of y'all got like SBIR grants too. So I think there's like so many synergies, you know? Yeah.
Yes.
Crazy. Wow.
Yes, okay. And I'd love to talk about SBIR too. I think it's a lot of your listeners could probably benefit from absolutely. Talking about SBIR. So yeah, it's, we do have that in common. I'm well aware of that company. You said they're in Austin, right?
Yeah, he's in Austin now.
Yeah, killing it. I love their product.
Awesome, man. Well, we love your product. So can you really quick, can you break down what an SBIR is and like why someone would benefit from it or how?
Yes, absolutely. So SBIR stands for Small Business Innovation Research, and it's a program that has been around since the early 80s, since 1982. And it was started by Congress. And in a nutshell, Congress created this mandate, this program, to help small business in the United States, you know, as a way to strengthen our economy and strengthen small business. And when I say a mandate, it is a mandate because the federal agencies, such as the Department of Defense, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Education, National Institute of Health, all these federal agencies that get funding allocations through Congress, they were given a mandate by Congress and still to this day that 5% of their budget has to be set aside to help grow small business. So obviously there's a lot of big companies out there who get big contracts with the U.S. government and, you know, and they're doing well, but small businesses to compete with these big companies, you know, it's sometimes can be daunting. So in order to help small businesses, and they define small business as any business with 500 employees or less, to help small business, this program was created, and it's sort of the U.S. government acting as an angel investor saying, you know, we want to invest in your company and in your services, in your products, in your software, anything. It has to be technology related. Because of the innovation, the I in SBIR is innovation. So any tech-related
company. There's like multiple departments, right? So like there can be a Department of Agriculture SBIR. There could be an Air Force SBIR. And then there's like also multiple phases, like 1, 2, 3 and beyond.
Yes, 1, 2, and 3, yes. And yeah, so we were fortunate in that when we first started Occupath, we started in March of 2018.
Yeah.
And we started on the very first day that the Thunder launch pad started through Stitch Crew. And I always say that Occupath's success has been 100% dependent on being involved in this accelerator, in the Thunder launch pad accelerator. You know, Stitch Crew, everybody at Stitch Crew has been instrumental in helping me to build Occupath to what it is today.
Same here.
Yeah,
Stitch Crew family, man.
Exactly. Which is how I got to meet you fine gentlemen. And hey. So because of Stitch Crew, I was introduced to Tom Wavering with OK Catalyst, which is part of the OU Innovation Hub, University of Oklahoma Innovation Hub.
Right.
So Tom Wavering and Daniel Moses had an accelerator in April of 2018, their own accelerator that I found out about through Stitch Crew. And Tom and Daniel, I mean, these guys are just brainiacs when it comes to getting these federal dollars, this SBIR money. And as a matter of fact, you know, Tom has, you know, hundreds of SBIR projects under his belt.
Yeah.
He knows how to win these contracts. And so he in this accelerator, he taught all of us and, you know, several companies there the secret sauce and like the do's and don'ts and how to properly submit a proposal and, you know, what the government is looking for. I mean, when I first started Occupath, I could barely even spell SBIR. I was misspelling it left and right. I didn't know
bro, you're saying how it's spelled, bro. I mean, but I'm making a joke. But I literally wrote SPIR on my. I had to fix it to a B.
And I was saying like SIRB because of like my grad school background. So like, anyways, I mean, what I'm trying to say is I had no idea what this. I had no idea it existed. And truth be told, When Tom Wavering was telling us, you know, how to go about getting this funds, he also said that it's not easy to get this funding. And
that very few Oklahoma companies over the years have gotten the funding as compared to other states.
Yeah.
So I thought, man, I'm an Oklahoma company. Like, I'm a new company. I'm never going to get this funding. I'm just going to apply to get the experience. I mean, and I've already started this, so I might as well finish it. Because it was a 20-page proposal. And yeah, there's a lot of writing and it can get really technical.
Yeah.
But Tom Wavering held my hand, metaphorically speaking, throughout the whole process. And
is there anything else you want to talk about?
And he really helped me understand the whole process and gave me a lot of confidence, right?
Big time.
And because of that, we got our first award in 2018 with the U.S. Navy.
And these are small awards, right? They're like in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, our first award was basically $150,000.
Wow.
Phase one to create a feasibility study. So, you know.
And the U.S. Navy gave you this, or like the U.S. Navy like wanted you to create this for the U.S. Navy?
So the U.S. Navy wanted us to create a feasibility study for the U.S. Navy. Very cool. I like to compare it to like auditioning. So, for example, let's say you're going to get married and you want to hire a catering company. And you know you're only going to hire one catering company, but yet you want to audition three of them. So you have these three catering companies.
You do each. The taste test?
Yes, like a taste test. Exactly.
And hold your hand.
So you would say to them, don't make the whole meal. Make a smaller version of the meal. We're going to taste each one of them, and whichever one we'll like, they will be our full-on catering company for the wedding to do the entire meal, right?
So it's like a pilot test, pretty much. And then if it works out, there's like opportunity for like a actual contract or implementation of what you are testing out.
Right.
And then pay for it.
Exactly. And to really continue on the analogy, what we could say is phase one is telling them what you would do if you were given a phase two. If you win the phase two, you create a demo of what you wrote about in phase one. And if they like the demo or the prototype in phase two, then you get a phase three, which is the full award, which is like you're catering at the wedding. Gotcha. But
you get like a restaurant at the Navy base.
Exactly. Right.
And really quick, is this like a pyramid kind of a thing where it's like let's say eight companies get the P1 and then like a couple move to P2 and then P3, or is it kind of just like you're at your own little pace, like moving up or down as you go?
No, I mean, you're definitely competing. There's other small businesses that want to get this, this phase one. So, you know, you might have 300 companies applying for phase one, and maybe only two or three or one get chosen for phase one. And if you're the only one in phase one, then you're kind of competing against yourself in a way, I guess, to get a phase two. And if you're fortunate enough to get a phase two, then it's kind of yours. You could say it's the ball's in your court on whether or not you get a phase three. And I should also say that a phase three is technically or somewhat like a misnomer, because phase three is not really a phase per se. It really is a government contract. So
yeah,
if we're all as business owners in interested in getting government contracts, right? If that's the end goal, you could say that phase one and phase two are like practice or like a guided assistance towards getting you towards the final goal, which is becoming a full-fledged government contractor.
Now, Tony just got that phase three, right? For his base connect.
Yeah. Yes, he did. Yes, Tony Whedon.
That's
crazy.
And Tony Whedon was in that class with me in April.
Oh, y'all were in the same batch for the OU Catalyst?
Yes, and we were in the same batch for Thunder Launchpad, Ditch Crew.
Wow.
Ditch Crew,
yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, and he's awesome. I love that guy. And I remember the very first night we met, the very first event we had, it was like everybody introducing themselves and like, you know, we were presented to the public or whatever. And I clicked with him right away.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, we've had a very close SBIR walk together. And yeah, he's been
great. I was going to say, no hand-holding on this walk.
Yeah, right. And it's been Air Force. So like his first contract was also, I think, 50K, and it was with the Air Force. Our first contract was Navy, 50K. But then that was 150K. And then we got a 50K award from the Air Force a year later.
Yeah.
And And that turned into a phase two, which is what we're still working on now. So in this past November, and also want to give a shout out to Ross Forsyth too, who has also been a part of the Stitch Crew Accelerator Thunder Launchpad.
Shout out to Ross.
Because
he was involved, is still involved with us on this this Air Force contract that we have right now. So the Air Force contract started April of 2019. We got paid $50,000 again to do a feasibility study. What would you do if we were to give you more money? We said, you know, if you would give us $1 million, this is what we would do.
Yeah.
So they said, okay, we're still interested. Come to San Francisco, November of 2019, and pitch to a panel of judges. So it was called the Rapid Sustainment Office Pitch Day. And it's this office of the Air Force whose purpose is to try to find ways to help the Air Force reduce costs, specifically in the areas of maintenance.
Yeah.
So we're there in San Francisco, and it's sort of like a Shark Tank kind of approach. I guess you could say I was presenting the deck, answering questions, and making the case about why they should give us a phase two, why they should give us $1 million to create a prototype. And man, fortunately, and I mean, we were very blessed. They said yes. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, man. I was on cloud nine. My wife and my kids were out there.
Yeah.
And with me in San Francisco, and like, it was awesome. It was my first time visiting the Bay Area.
Nice.
Awesome food, you know, hanging out.
All the money you wanted to.
Yeah, man. And then to realize that, you know, this was such a huge step for Occupath, you know, to have $1 million to create a prototype in VR.
I missed that part. You said $1 million? I didn't hear
$1 million.
I was drinking coffee for a second. Damn, good for you.
$1 million. Yes, yes. So now, obviously, the goal is to take this prototype and create something that is really going to be useful for the Air Force, something that is going to knock their socks off so that we can potentially get a phase three, a full-fledged contract. So we're creating a piece or portion of the VR training. And if they like what they see, we'll create the entire VR training program, curriculum in VR. And when That's I say so curriculum, cool. we're talking about an Air Force base in New Mexico called Cannon Air Force Base, and they perform maintenance on a specific aircraft called the CV-22. It's also called the Osprey. It's the half helicopter, half plane.
Ooh, Call of Duty. Those are really cool.
I've flown those.
Yeah, you've seen them? I love them, man. And like, we got to go inside of one and like
take What?
Cool. Yeah, we haven't been one in the air. We haven't flown in one, but
yeah.
I'll tell you what, it was something else, and I really enjoyed it. And so here we are creating this for them. And what it is in a nutshell is that CV-22, you know, they perform maintenance on it. You know, they do repairs and they maintain it, you know, and they do routine maintenance just like we do on our cars. They do it too. And they have young trainees, young maintainers, as they're called, or some people call them aircraft mechanics, but they're technically called maintainers. And so you got these young maintainers who are needing to learn how to maintain this aircraft and how to work on it. But it's not always available to work on because it's out doing missions. Or if it's
expensive to work on it too.
It's expensive, especially if you make a mistake.
Yeah.
So what we do is we've created the digital twin of this aircraft and a curriculum that goes along with it. You know, it asks you questions. It has assessments. To see test your understanding, and basically you can work on an aircraft without it being there. It's the next best thing to it being there in front of you, and if it breaks, you push a button and it fixes itself. It's not $1 million mistake, mm-hmm. and because you know these aircraft are so expensive, you break something, it could be $1 million mistake. But in VR, there's not that risk, and also in VR, there's no wear and tear, and so these things that they in the real world don't have the luxury of being able to do as often, because it's not always available. And even when it is available, do you want to take the risk of damaging an aircraft only in the name of training?
Yeah.
The training that they do have is, classroom based and PowerPoint based. So, you know,
it's a lot more immersive, kind of like feels like working on the aircraft.
Well, I was going to say, this reminds me of when we interviewed Schmirti and Jacques, who I don't know if you've met, but They did the same kind of thing. I mean, it was not VR, but like real. But they take, because surgeons in college and getting their doctorate and everything, literally practice on vegetables and shit to do surgery. Like, there's not a real thing. They've created like a 3D version of like a breast or like a leg, where they can actually perform the surgery, which one is way less expensive than, or actually I guess it's more expensive than a fruit, but like way less expensive than literally, you know, killing someone or like, you know, damaging someone's life and then the hospital gets sued later. So, it's really cool. But I was going to ask you, how long does it take you? Like, okay, we got Osprey, right? How long does it take you as a developer to like virtually create an Osprey? Like, that sounds like an insane project.
Yeah. Oh, I would love a little bit about the instructional design process too, because I bet you have to talk to a lot of experts, you know, to actually.
Oh, I thought you meant curriculum. Like, I thought you meant like design it, like how he coded it. I
was
like,
no. I was like, no, you literally asked that.
Yeah, I was like, no, but I was like, how would we understand what he's saying? there's a few things there. We'll start with like, how do you even start with designing an Osprey?
Yeah, so what we're doing right now, for example, is we're taking that aircraft and we're doing a portion of the tasks that that these trainees learn. So we're not having to create the full, every little piece, every digital piece of this aircraft. We're just doing one task that they have to learn out of, you know, there's all like over 100 tasks that these trainees need to know to go from a level 3, which, you know, they're like in their 20s, 20, 21 year old as a level 3. And their goal is to get to a level 5. And before you can get to a level 5, you know, you have to know all these tasks. And so with this phase 2, we're just doing a portion of it. So we only have to do so many models, right? Like, you know, we don't have to get every wire and every pipe or whatever, every nut and bolt of the whole aircraft. We're just doing that which is needed for these tasks, right? And also, this is just a portion of the knowledge required to work on this aircraft. So to get from a level 3 to a level 5, you're not an expert, obviously, because there's also level 7 and level 9. The level 9s are the experts. They're the ones that, you know, they take it to a whole nother level, so to speak. But to get from a level 3 to a level 5 is what we're focusing on. And it's this whole program that they already have set up, a curriculum that they have set up. And so they've set aside, okay, to get a guy from level 3 to level 5, they need to know these tasks. And those are the tasks that we're working on. So we won't have to model every little piece. But, you know, it's kind of like creating a video game. So if you've ever seen how a game like Fortnite is created, it's created in a game engine called Unreal. And there's another engine called Unity. So when you create these experiences, it's almost like creating a video game. It's like, you know, you got the 3D models and you program the code to, you know, whenever my hand touches this object, the following happens. And they call that colliders. When my hand collides with this particular 3D object, with this particular sprite, the following functions need to take place. So it's a lot like creating a video game. There's also the video version of VR training, where you take a camera that has lenses all around, like a 360-degree ball camera, I guess you could say. It's like a ball that you place in the middle of a room, and whatever you do in front of that camera can be viewed in a VR headset, which is also called a head-mounted display, a VR headset. So you've got, you know, HMDs like the Oculus Quest. Like, as a matter of fact, yesterday the Oculus Quest 2 just came out, and so I have here, we have here in our office 10 of these Oculus Quest headsets.
Big drop.
You have them there right now?
Yes. So next time you guys come, you guys can check it out.
I'm leaving for a week. I'll be back next Wednesday, and I want to see.
Yeah, me too.
How far is it? Was that your first time using it? No, you used it when we met that first at that retreat, right?
Yeah, and I that's the one I use the Magic Leap, but I've used a couple of VR headsets before. Like, I love playing Beat Saber.
It's blast. Yeah. Oh, okay. What's new about the new Oculus besides the two?
Say, tell me, what's new with Oculus? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah, like, what's new with Oculus? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so Oculus, maybe not a lot of people know this, but Oculus is owned by Facebook. And
it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, and if anybody out there doesn't know that, they will, because Facebook is really putting a lot of money into this. And so much so that Facebook has created something called Horizon, which if you've ever say it again,
the metaverse, right? It's like a like a virtual like VR, like social network, pretty much.
Wait, is it it kind of like oh my god, what's that game, Second Life, but like VR?
Right, and of course, Second Life came out, you know, like early 2000s. So it was along the same, in the same vein, I guess you could say, right? And you don't see a lot of Second Life as much anymore. I think it's still out there, but it's certainly not anywhere near the level of what the Oculus Quest is at in terms of, adoption and users. And also with this Horizon thing, Facebook is betting that, you know, many, many, many more people in this country will, and in beyond, in the rest of the world, will want to have this virtual Second Life, if you will, and in VR. And really, it's a better comparison is probably what's called the Oasis in the book Ready Player One and the movie.
Ooh, that's good, it's such a – well, no, that's what I'm imagining. But I feel like Second Life is the computer version – like the stepping stone to like what will be eventually Ready Player One, and then this is kind of like the ground. It's a great movie.
Me too.
I didn't even like that kind of stuff. Loves that movie. I'm just like, okay, that means it's a good movie.
Exactly. Yeah, because I mean, there's all these Easter eggs and like retro gaming and like references to pop cultures. So yeah, a lot of people might not be into that stuff, but you're right. A lot of people have expressed how much they like the movie and the concept. And in the movie, you know, Oasis is this other virtual Second Life. And what's interesting is that Mark Zuckerberg, whenever, not long after they, you know, started doing, putting all these resources and time towards VR, he bought a copy of Ready Player One, the book, and gave it to all of his executive staff, everybody.
No way.
And told them, you need to read this. And so it kind of implied that, you know, Mark Zuckerberg is all in on VR, and it's a gamble, just like anything, right? But you know, maybe there comes to a point to where, you know, no, and maybe it never happens. But my money obviously is on the fact that it is going to happen, and it's going to continue to grow, and more people are going to be doing more and more things in VR.
Man, I feel like we covered so many awesome topics. I mean, from the SBIRs to the future of VR and even today. And, you know, one thing that you said that I kind of picked up on a little bit was like you talking about your graduate school experience. I'd love to learn a little bit about Greg before OccuPath and, you know, what your kind of journey looked like and like how you eventually like got into starting the company in the first place. But yeah, let's get into it, man.
Yeah. Thank you. No, I'm happy to talk about that. And, again, just thank you for the opportunity to tell my story. You guys are awesome. And
I got you, family.
I admire you guys, both of you, very much. And so really, my background is more so as an educator. So I've taught in the classroom. I've been a classroom teacher in middle school, high school. In my mid-20s, I decided to start a doctoral program in the area of cognitive studies and as it relates to educational technology. So when I'm 26 in 2006, I'm in New York at a college there and on the Upper West Side, Morningside Heights.
Okay. Living up
in Manhattan. New York. Yeah, doing my thing in Manhattan, and I was the only guy. What's funny though is that since I'm such an Okie, I was born and raised here, and I love Oklahoma so much that I think I was the only guy in New York daydreaming about being back in Oklahoma.
That is an odd thing.
I lived in New York in Manhattan 7 years because I also did my master's program there.
Yeah.
And I would say things like, man, I miss parking lots. Or,
well, I mean, yeah, but like, I mean, I lived in LA for 3 years and Oklahoma, like whether or not I want to be back in LA or not, I'm like, dude, I love that I can park anywhere.
Like, and they have a lot of parks too.
And I couldn't imagine being in New York. I've never been to New York, but like from what I've seen, it reminds me of like LA, but like if you just shoved it more together. And so I couldn't imagine trying to like drive or maneuver around that city. But again, I still haven't been. So
like the living costs are crazy too. But like,
we got a whole lot of things we can talk about. Yeah. No, exactly.
Oh no, tell me about it. I mean, I had a landlord tell me once, "Hey Greg, I'm really excited, man. I just bought a parking spot," and he was an investor, right? A real estate investor. Yeah. I was like, oh, don't you mean a parking lot? No, parking spot. Like I said, for one car? Yeah, I bought a parking spot. Really? How, I didn't know you could do that. How much did you pay? $300,000, man. It's a steal.
Wait, what?
You paid $300,000 for a parking spot? Why? He says, I'm going to rent it.
That's crazy.
That's New York, man. But I was walking around Manhattan. I was saying things like, I can't wait till I have a mortgage and I can mow my own lawn and stuff like I can have a lawn. Like it was, maybe it was more so the biological clock coming into play there too, about me wanting to be back in Oklahoma and starting a family and what have you. But at that time I'm single, I'm in grad school and I'm learning about how people learn. You know, cognitive science comes down to, you can boil it down to just how people learn. And, you know, everything that's involved with that. There's something called metacognition, which is thinking about thinking. Whenever you ask someone, why did you do that? Why did you answer that question in that way? Why did you include this in your essay? That's just an example of a portion of cognitive science, metacognition, thinking about thinking. And so there's all these little areas under cognitive science, you know, memory, executive function. There's neuroscience too, in terms of the physiology of the brain and synapses and whatnot. But the area of cognitive studies that attracted me the most was something called embodied cognition. And it you can really, in its simplest terms, call it learning by doing. So a lot of people in my program, in my doctoral program, we were all really focused on embodied cognition, learning by doing. And so anything that we did, it usually involved somehow embodied cognition, the role that perception and our bodies play in how we learn. And you've probably heard it before, like I'm a hands-on learner. You've heard that. That's sort of related to that. So when you marry that with technology, it seemed like a really good fit for me, virtual reality, because it has a lot of the same value that we get from our perception in terms of what we see, what we hear, moving around in the 3D space. There's a lot of congruencies there. So that's basically what we did in that program, is we would take technology and find applications for it for learning, you know, in the classroom or outside of the classroom. And even what we're doing now with employee training and, you know, workplace training, to me, it's still learning, right? It's still linked to those theories that we would learn about in class about how people learn. It's just not related to a report card in K-12. It's related to job performance, right? And procedural knowledge. And so, you know, that's my background. And, you know, we would do experiments where we would take technology and we would either create a piece of software that do something, or we would find software that's already out there. And we would test it. Like, for example, there was a project that took Legos and the Lego Mindstorms that are programmable with little motors. And you take that technology and you applied it to fourth grade physics. And all of a sudden, you've got this curriculum and you're testing whether or not it's useful. Does it help students to better learn physics, or is it more of a distraction? So that's the kind of those are the kind of research projects that we would do, experiments that we would do in grad school. And you could say that I'm still doing it to this day. But now the technology is VR, and we're still looking at how people learn. And it's not physics in fourth grade. Now it's how to learn as best possible, the best ways to maintain this aircraft, with 20-year-olds. So, yeah, it's definitely been very useful. I still haven't finished my PhD yet. I'm at the dissertation stage. But yeah, I mean, the goal is for one day to be Dr. Greg Holman. And so my kids can be proud of me.
Shut up. Your kids are, I'm sure, your kids, they're going to be proud of you until you get your doctorate. I think that's, incredible. It's so cool how like your career and like your ideology on all this stuff, like evolved since, you know, from wanting to be interested in this stuff to like doing it in college to like starting a company. And now it's like your full-time job, and you can kind of like loop around to kind of like the OG story of where it all began. One thing I wanted to ask, so there's kind of a bottleneck on your job and, or sorry, your business. And it's not really like a bad one in it by any means, because you can make so much money with specific careers. But like, would you agree that the bottleneck for the time being is that when like another type of job wants to work with you, you have to like kind of, you know, put your full attention to building like another Osprey for like a, like say for a, you know, a fire department, like designing a truck engine or something like that? Or do you see technology kind of catching up and getting to the point where it's like you could easily design a truck engine really easily and then kind of manipulate or duplicate your process across multiple systems?
Yeah. So I think that we're going to see more and more a convergence between virtual reality and augmented reality. And for people out there who don't know the difference between VR and AR, and then you're probably going to hear a term called XR, which you could say is just maybe the umbrella of both VR and AR, X standing for mixed reality, or sometimes called extended reality. But when you talk about VR and AR, I feel like in the future, they're going to converge to where the hardware can do either. And, you know, VR is more so you're completely immersed and everything you see around you is not there and is either has been recorded beforehand or created by like a 3D artist. And you know, so in the whole world in front of your eyes, up, down, left, right, is all fake, right? Whether it's a video of something real that was recorded beforehand or something created in the computer. Whereas augmented reality is something is computer information that's superimposed onto the real world. Like you can still see the real world. You can still look down and see yourself, which the shoes you're wearing, but there's information overlaid onto that, superimposed, that helps you to accomplish a task or to play a game or learn something, whatever. So not only do I foresee that happening, and I'm not the only person that thinks that. And the reason I think that is because, you know, it happened with other technology. I'm old enough to where I remember I had to carry a digital camera with me as well as my cell phone on a trip, because if I wanted to take pictures, I need the digital camera. If I wanted to make a phone call, here's my Nokia. And eventually those converged. So convergence, I think, is also going to happen with these headsets in terms of mixed reality or immersive technology, as sometimes it's called, through the umbrella term. In terms of creating content, like what you mentioned about the fire truck, I think that in the future, it's going to be much easier to take special cameras that are what they call volumetric cameras, sometimes also called LIDAR, LIDAR. And say it again.
That was a dumb I have lie detection.
Yeah. It's like radar for lies, right? Yeah. I mean, LIDAR basically it's a method of measuring distances. So, you know, it'll like shoot out light and whatever is reflected back is, you know, it helps to tell the computer or, you know, the software what's in front of it. Kind of like sonar or like, you know, like what bats would do, right? Echolocation in a way. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's LIDAR. And yeah, I mean, LIDAR has been around for a long time. The government has been using it forever. But we're seeing that it's becoming more and more readily available. Like for example, now it's going to be on the iPhone 12. And so it's going to be, I think
really, a big day, the whole Apple announcement, like they've really over-indexed on the whole camera features, like within their own.
Ooh, exactly. Quick question. Is the measurements app on your phone a form of LIDAR?
So I don't have an iPhone, but I'm assuming if I had to assume, the measurements app has got to be more GPS, because I don't think it casts out a bunch of points of light to measure, you know, like how big the couch is, right? Like,
I don't know. Yeah. I'm asking you. I don't know if it does that.
Isn't the measurements app like you hit a button, you walk a distance, and it tells you linear feet?
You can like draw a line now. Like
yeah, you can literally draw like different shapes and everything on your screen. Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
Okay, so that probably, maybe that is more like LIDAR.
Oh, look at me learning, dude.
My truth, yeah. I don't think it's LIDAR, but I'll give Corey a point.
We're walking towards LIDAR. Walk towards the LIDAR.
Yeah, you're going to see more and more LIDAR without a doubt. And the advantage of LIDAR is you've got the fire truck in front of you, and the LiDAR camera, you walk around it and you're scanning, creating a 3D scan of that fire truck. And yeah, 3D scans, right? People who are doing their own 3D scans with cameras right now are like, they're not like video game quality level, super high level, like advanced scans, but that's going to keep getting better and better, right? It's not like it's going to stagnate or go in the opposite direction. It's going to get better.
Autonomous cars, and even like when I was working my drone startup, we used a LiDAR sensor to map out like rooms and like build like and actually assign like, you know, build out like the volume that it sees from room to room. So I think adoption is going to go crazy, and especially because like, you know, 5G is going to be a thing pretty soon. It's going to be really interesting the kinds of implementations that we'll see across the board.
And I totally forgot that Farhaj understands technology and hardware and was in drones and robots and shit. So I was like looking at him like, I don't understand this. And he's like, oh, no, but like the LiDAR.
I didn't know about the drone. I'd like to learn more about that. Yeah.
Well, I'll send you his podcast. I interviewed Farhaj back like a year ago or something like that. I don't know. A while ago. So
yeah, we'll chop it up at Stitch Crew too.
He's got a big robotics background himself. We're not going to go into it. It's a whole nother.
I had no idea.
There you go, dude. I'll send you the link.
Yeah, Robo Boy Hodge.
Everyone listening, Farhaj's episode on the pod is, I'm just going to delete. We're just going to do awkward pause and I'm just going to delete it. Here it is, right?
Number 50.
Oh, damn. Yeah, I did that on purpose, but like I forgot.
Yeah. Oh, that's dope.
Yeah, so episode number 50 is Farhaj. You can hear his story.
Wow.
And I think my episode was 50, and then there's these two people.
Somebody interviewed you?
Yeah, someone interviewed me, and then I put it on mine. And then these two people that I interviewed were like total, just couldn't, they were so rude after the podcast. And I was just like, nope. And so I finally just deleted both their episodes, pushing me away from number 50, unfortunately. So you took the 50 spot. So there
you go. I'll take what I can get and I'll be number 50, yo.
Boom. So one thing I wanted to ask you, cause this has actually been probably the most, smooth flowing podcast I've ever done, where it's like you just keep going into different segments and we ask questions that flow into the next segment and we're like, okay, we've asked all the questions we want to ask. So you mentioned Chris Lucas, who Farhaj and I are both familiar with because he's one of the founders.
Dad right there.
He's
gonna
dad?
Be pissed I call him dad.
You call him dad. Okay, Farhaj is daddy and then my friend. So metaphorically. Chris Lucas is the co-founder of Stitch Crew which you mentioned you were a part of in the first batch. Farhaj was a part of it two batches ago. Two batches ago. And then I'm a part of it now. So can you kind of talk about like how the founder of Stitch Crew became your co-founder and like what his role is at the company?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I mean, so as I mentioned, I'm part of batch one, right? Occupath was part of batch one. And batch one started in March of 2018. But the deadline to apply to be a part of batch one was in late February of 2018. And a week before the deadline, I'm looking at the Oklahoma Gazette, and there's this article about the new partnership between Oklahoma City Thunder and Stitch Crew to create the launchpad. And, you know, the whole purpose of it, to help founders. And it says, if you have an idea in any of these fields, let us know. And one of them was educational technology. And I'm like, oh man, I'm an ed tech guy, man. And I for several years prior to starting Occupath, I was a wantrepreneur, right? Trying to figure out how I can create a startup. And before I even really knew what a startup really, really was, right? What it really is, I was, you know, listening to podcasts and reading books and my favorite of all those books was The 4-Hour Work Week. And I used to read the $100 Startup and listening to podcasts such as How I Built This.
Building Fires.
Yes, Building Fires. Exactly. That, in that vein, trying to soak up as much as I can, right? Just like your listeners. So I would hear all the horror stories about what it's like to create a startup and the success stories and what it takes. And, you know, so one of the things I learned along the way was always be on the lookout. If you see a problem or if you see a pain point that someone is having, that's an indication that you might have a good product on your hands, right? I mean, if you can find some pain and you can eliminate that pain, you're going to get paid for it, right? Someone's probably going to be willing to pay you to help them to make their life easier. And so I started creating these lists of things that I would want, because also Timothy Ferris said you should be in the market of who it is you're marketing to. You should be a member of that market if at all possible. So my list is a lot of things that I think that we would need. So I have this Evernote entry that has like, I don't know how many business ideas it has on it. But of course, you know, it's not about the ideas. It's about execution. That's something that Chris Lucas taught me. You know, ideas come and go. And I learned not to be afraid to share these ideas. I used to think, oh, I can't let anybody know about this business idea because somebody could try to steal it from me. But you know, even if they did steal the idea from you, they are only going to do it in the way that they know how to do it, and the execution will not be the same. So, you know, I started creating this list of ideas. And so when I saw that Stitch Crew was looking for something EdTech related, I went to my list and I thought, okay, which of these ideas is EdTech related?
And, well, you literally had a list of like, what could I do when you went to go apply?
Yeah, I still do.
I've never heard that. That's dope. Is crazy.
Well, I have this in front of me right now, and one of them is mini golf in VR, which I don't think anybody has done yet.
Okay, me and you need to link up, because literally, I thought I would have already had an exit by now years ago when I had this idea. But there is not a freaking mini golf course in all of downtown LA, and then all West LA, and then South LA, or like Manhattan Beach area. It is insane. It makes no sense. There is no putt-putt anywhere. You have to either go up to the valley or go down to like Compton area to go to putt-putt.
That's crazy.
Santa Monica, no putt-putt. Venice Beach, nope. It's like, it is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. And I'm like, bro, I'm about to take over. There's a putt-putt course area that I want. Okay, anyways. But if I can combine that with VR, bruh.
Yeah, you're first customer right here for this project.
We'll start in OKC and we'll expand.
I love that kind of stuff. Like, I love what you just said, like finding where there's gaps and coming up with ideas of what would help. And like, for example, with a friend of mine, we come up with an idea for interactive augmented reality for parties. If you're a DJ and, you know, you could be dancing with a celebrity in augmented reality at this wedding. I have here also SMS based therapy in Spanish. So like, if you know you wow. want some counseling advice and you're yeah. going to do it via text messages, it happens in English, but it's not in Spanish.
You get the text.
Say it again. Yeah, having a counselor to text with you.
That's huge.
And then what else? Just all these kinds of ideas. I thought about doing a partnership with the Pioneer Woman on TV for pies. Like if I created pies and it would be licensed under her name, like, because, you know, basically because there's a licensed pie with Patti LaBelle, you know, the famous pie that she did, but there's not one for the Pioneer Woman.
I love that name. I didn't know that was a thing, but I know what they do, the and Pioneer I love it. Pioneer Woman. I love that.
Yeah. There's no video game league for elementary school kids, so like you can play, you know, in basketball leagues and baseball leagues as an adult and as a kid, little league, but there's no little league video game.
Yeah,
like esports. There's no esports little league yet, and why not?
Company just raised like hundreds of millions of dollars called Play BS, and they built like a video game league for high school.
There you go. But what about Little League, like the elementary kids? So things yeah. like that. So I went to the list and I saw that I had on something on there called VR job shadowing. So it's this idea that I had when I was working at Oklahoma City Community College with high school students, and I thought, man, it would be awesome if these high school kids could go and shadow different professionals in VR without having to be there. Because you can't always shadow everyone that you want to shadow, because, you know, maybe it's hard to find somebody in your city or your town that is doing mm-hmm. something that you want to do that you can go shadow them for 4 hours. Instead, you shadow them in VR, pre-recorded experiences.
Very cool.
And also
VR kind of.
Right.
The teachers are more like tangible. Like it's not like Gordon Ramsay. It's like a mechanic that is in like Oklahoma City kind of a thing.
Exactly. And it also alleviates the problem of, I can't have 100 high school kids shadowing me at one time. In VR, yeah. you can. I can't have anybody come shadow me. My job is dangerous. In VR, you can. So that's how the idea started. But it was very loose, and all I had was an idea. Like, I didn't even have a name. So there's a week left to apply to be a part of batch one. I had just found out about it. I'm like, oh, no, I only have a week left. What do I do? I go on to apply, and one of the first questions is, what is your company name? Oh, crap, I don't even have a name. So I had to come up with a name real quick, and I didn't even have a logo, no website.
What was the first name of your company?
Well, I just created it on the fly, Occupath. But the only reason I created it was to apply for the Stitch Crew Accelerator. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, all I had was an idea, and I didn't even have a name. So I was, not only was I pre-revenue, I was pre-name. So, yeah. I mean, it was, so as needless to say, I'm trying to say I was wet behind the ears. I was, you know, very green, right? So I needed all the help I could get. I had never done anything in the business world related to anything that could be remotely even considered a tech startup, an ed tech company. I had only done things in the academic world, right? So I didn't even know how to spell like FICA, and I needed a lot of help like figuring out how to incorporate in the best way possible. I had no idea about Delaware C-based corporations. You know what I'm trying to say? And so I would tell Erica and Chris Lucas, Tony Wheaton and I are the only people in this program who don't have co-founders, and everybody has co-founders and wow. who complement them. And Tony Wheaton doesn't want a co-founder. He doesn't need it. He's already rocking and rolling. He was not necessarily pre-revenue, and he was still early, but he had a lot more done. I was much farther behind than him. And even to this day, I don't think Tony Wheaton has a co-founder, if I remember correctly. But so I was desperate to find a co-founder, and wasn't having any luck. So so Chris Lucas said, you know, I believe in what you're doing. I believe in you, and I'd like to help you build this company because I think that I can add value to what it is you're trying to do. I was telling him, I need someone like you, Chris. If I could only find someone like you to be my co-founder, I think this company could be successful.
Pretty solid pitch, I would say.
Yeah. And I even said, I wish there was a way that you could somehow be my co-founder. And yeah. And I mean, I remember telling him that, and when I said those things, like I never thought that he would be interested. But I was desperate to have someone like him because, you know, he has a background as an entrepreneur. He has had companies. His project management background, a lot better on the financial side than I am. I'm still learning stuff to this day. I mean, Chris Lucas is like a big brother to me because he's helping me to set up a 401k and telling me what I should do for my future, one day when I retire or if I'm to die, and my wife and kids, you know, what I can leave behind for them. I mean, that's very valuable stuff that, you know, it's hard to get out of a book. And so I'm very fortunate because there's people lined up. I mean, I'm not joking. Like, I see people, I'm up here all the time with Eric and Chris Lucas, and there's people who are desperate to pick their brains, to get help from them, to get advice from them. And I get it every day. And yeah. All I have to do is just ask, and they're right there. So I feel very fortunate to have everybody at Stitch Crew in my corner. Not just Erica and Chris, but Gabby as well. I mean, these are talking about three people who really care about us as founders and absolutely. Who are not in it to make a buck off of us. They're in it because they believe in us and they want to help us. And yeah, and that's why I say Occupath would not have the success it has today. I wouldn't be able to be putting food on my kids' plate today with Occupath money had it not been for Stitch Crew.
Love it, man. I love it, dude. I really love it. And
I'm hyped up.
Well, I love it, man. So we're approaching the top of the hour here. Me and Farhaj have some stuff we need to you know, bounce out to in a few minutes. So I'll let Farhaj do the closing ceremonies. But honestly, man, this has been a really great episode, and I've already written down like 20 things that I've learned, and I have a to-do list.
He has his ideas list now.
Yeah. The putt, and I want to create a shirt for nerds called "I Only Date 3D Models" and has a picture of a nerd.
Oh, I would buy that shirt. I love that idea.
might have, sure. I know you would. So we're gonna work on that after the episode, but I'll let Farhaj do the ending ceremonies here.
Well, Sir Greg, it's time to roll out the red carpet, and this is the opportunity for you to drop your name, drop your handle, where people can find you and your company. So please give us a shout, and we'll get the word out to our listeners. Let's go.
Thank you. So I mean, it's real easy. You can find us occupath.com. That's O as in Oklahoma, C as in Charlie, U as in umbrella, P as in purple, A as in alpha, T as in Tom, and H as in hat.com. OCUPATH.com. And also, you know, on LinkedIn, I'm heavily involved on LinkedIn, and you can find me on there, Greg Hallman, Hallman. It's probably my favorite social media, maybe that and Instagram. I'm also on Instagram at
what's your Instagram right now?
Yeah, my Instagram, it's not as flashy as it should be, or doesn't have as much good content. But my handle on there is it is ghallman405, ghallman405. So you know, there's basically.
So we're gonna go to Kudolandia.
Yes. Yes.
On IG. Boom. Tag the OG Greg, and yeah, put out the good word, man.
Yeah, well, Kudolandia. We'd love to have any of your guests at any of our Crudolandia locations for Mexican seafood and the Mexican micheladas, also known as red beer, beer cocktails. You know, what I like to call it beach food. It's beach mex.
Boom, man. Well, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, cause it's the kind of food that you can find like street food, in these beach resorts in Mexico. That's the whole vibe of the place.
That's lit.
Love it, man. Well, Greg, I got to bounce to another call. This has been so incredible, man.
Thank you so much for making the time. I mean, yeah. This was so insightful. This was crazy. Yeah.
So I'll see you at Stitcher next week.
Likewise. Yes, we'll see you guys up here. Thanks for your time.
All right, take it easy, man. Sun and moon for Occupath.
Thanks, everyone, so much for tuning in to the Building Fires podcast.
Yeah, man. We're planning on dropping episodes every Monday, talking to some amazing guests and giving you the content you deserve.
Boom. Farhaj and I are so grateful for you guys. I can edit this.
I know.
Farhaj and I are so grateful for all of your support. If you can, please leave 5 stars and a review on your podcast app, whichever one you use. Farhaj and I would definitely appreciate it. I'm trying to get our little podcast SEO up.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, looking forward to seeing you next week, and we're excited to make... Ugh, 1 second. Looking forward to seeing you next week. We got some exciting guests for you.
Boom.
Guests for you. Like guests for you.
You scare me, curs.
Boom. Arr. Boom.